"Where are you, Reaper?" roared White Rose, one foot planted on the mound of gold. "Face me! You want blood?" The crowd cheered. "I'll give you blood," the Lordling promised. "Before God and men, the Reaper will stand trial for the lies he's told. We'll see what sort of man he is."
What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode, and not just any episode, but the last episode of Act 2, where we last left off as Haytham tries to escape from the jail where he's infiltrated to rescue Amatha. He walks right into Elias's ambush. If you missed that episode or any other, I will have a link to the full playlist down in the episode description, so you can check that out there, along with a couple of recap videos just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. All right, I'll have a little more to say at the end of the episode, but for now, let's get down to the good stuff. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Coliseum.
Keeper Nodding's mouth was dry, his tongue still sour with bile and the three fingers of whiskey he'd sucked down before he left the garrison. The lieutenant had tried to relieve him after all the excitement this morning. He was going on a full day without sleep, and his chest felt like he'd taken a kick from a horse, but Nott had insisted. Even so, the lieutenant had ordered him to check himself into the infirmary, and after lying about his symptoms, Nott had been cleared to join the others at the gardens. Suppose he didn't need to go. He was one of only a few cloaks who'd been a part of Lord White Rose's ambush who'd signed up to join the escort, and the nobleman had already intimated that Nott would be invited back to his plum job in the keep. But what better way to secure White Rose's favor than to show that he was ready to go even now? Sleep was for lesser men, men who didn't catch knives to the chest and live to tell about it. He'd tried to catch a few winks in the barracks before the escort was called to assemble, but he couldn't stop his heart from racing. He'd spent the better part of the morning shitting water into a bucket, turning over the punctured flask in his hands. He ought to be dead. At least the escort distracted him, although the noonday sun glaring down at his sallet didn't do much for his headache. They'd taken batons in lieu of crossbows, and as soon as they crested the top of the steps, the keepers had set about clearing the crowd from the dueling ground. The double line of 20 guards each had pressed the crowd back until they'd cleared a space about 10 paces wide and 30 or so long. A few stragglers were still shuffling up the steps. They slipped through the line of keepers and wedged themselves in with the others. The crowd buzzed with excitement, everywhere 100 eager conversations about what was to come. It reminded Nott of the fighting pits. Besides whiskey and women, the pits had always been a favored way for him to fritter away his wages. With his well-trained eye, he immediately identified at least three bookmakers who were scribbling out wager slips within a few feet of him. Nott resisted the urge to place a bet. After this morning, he'd make a fortune predicting Lord White Rose's challenger would be a no-show. Based on the handful of people shouting their predictions over the din of the crowd as they stuffed their pennies into the bookmaker's lockbox, the odds seemed to slightly favor the Reaper. Nott suppressed a smirk. Poor sods. Even the other keepers, the ones who didn't know about this morning's excitement, seemed eager for the impending duel. Dueling was the sort of thing you still heard about in drinking songs, but it had long since fallen out of fashion, at least in the great cities. While in tiny backwoods hamlets 100 miles from the nearest magistrate, they might still settle disputes in the old way, at the edge it simply wasn't civilized for men to hack each other to bits over petty grievances. After all, if they still settled things in the old way, who'd pay the jailers? Nott had had his eye on the duel for over a turn, ever since the Reaper's letters started appearing all over the city. For days, Greycloaks had been kicking down doors all throughout the coppers looking for him. Notting himself had been a part of a few such fruitless raids. He'd heard from his few remaining friends who served in the keep that Lord Whiterose had barricaded himself in his rooms, and that at night you could hear him through the walls, gibbering to himself and slashing at shadows with the big hand and a halfer he hefted wherever he went. It was all nonsense, of course. At least, when Whiterose had addressed the lads before the ambush, he'd seemed sharp and mercifully sane, if a mite twitchy. Nott had never spoken to the nobleman. He'd heard about it when the Gov raised him from obscurity, everyone had, but mostly he'd observed Lord Whiterose from a distance, wandering the bailey, practicing his swordplay, or flirting with the ladies that came to court. He was a ferocious swordsman, Nott knew, and up until the lieutenant had assigned him to crowd duty, he'd planned on losing his gray cloak and sneaking up to the garden to watch from the crowd. He'd heard outlandish stories that couldn't possibly be true about the nobleman's heroism out in the field as he carved a bloody swath across the Hinter every spring and sent the free nation fleeing south across the desert. A flash of sunlight on steel caught his attention as Whiterose and his house guards emerged onto the dueling ground. The crowd went quiet. Any lingering doubts that Nott had about the nobleman's ability or his humble upbringing vanished as Elias Whiterose strode across the lawn. His plate armor matched that of his house guards, down to the crest of his house emblazoned boldly on his breastplate. But while the rest of their faces were hidden behind steel visors, Whiterose had his helm tucked under his arm, his dark hair cascading down to his shoulders where his blood-red cape was clasped. He had the look of a man who had already won, which, as Nott and a few others knew, he already had. One of the house guards was holding a cloth-wrapped bundle and, presenting it to Whiterose, he drew a beautiful bastard sword from its sheath, identical to the one on the lordling's hip. Whiterose thrust it into the ground, then measured out 10 paces across the lawn. He turned, surveying the crowd, and he waited. He looked about a 7-year younger than the man Nott had tackled this morning. He was freshly shaved, and he looked like he'd had a bath. Even the dark circles under his eyes had improved. He wore a satisfied smirk as he surveyed the crowd, who'd begun cheering as soon as he drove the sword into the ground. Women in the front rows pressed against the line of keepers, waving scraps of fabric like pennants. Whiterose looked at them thoughtfully before choosing one. He approached the flushed-faced girl, who had nearly climbed over the keeper to Nodding's left, and bowed low before presenting his arm. Nott thought she'd swoon, but the girl held it together enough to tie the sky-blue kerchief around his upper arm. The nobleman's face was dotted with sweat, Nott noticed, the noonday sun beating down on his gleaming plate. The sweat cut runnels like tear tracks through the powder on his face. He bowed again before returning to his place in the middle of the dueling ground, and he waited. Of course, the Reaper never came. Right now, he was chained hand and foot, hanging from his ankles while old long knives flayed the skin off him in strips. But the crowd didn't know, and Whiterose made a big show of waiting as the tenor of the crowd grew more impatient. He's not coming. By now, he'd been waiting for almost a quarter of an hour, and an irritable buzz had arisen among the spectators. The nobleman let his gaze trail across the hundreds of faces squeezed together along the periphery. Where is he? He flung his arms wide. Where is he? The angry chatter of the crowd quieted instantly. Whiterose paced a circuit between where he'd been standing and the hand and a halfer thrust into the lawn. He never lost his composure, but a scarlet flush crept up his neck under his steel collar. He talks tall in his letters, Whiterose declared, calls me a coward and a butcher, begs me to meet him here to defend my good name. He paused with one hand on the pommel of the sword he'd sunk into the ground. So where is he to defend the lies he's told about me? The crowd hung on his every word. He sounded so earnest and proud and angry. It was almost enough to make Nodding forget that he'd clapped the Reaper in irons hours ago.
Nod briefly touched the gaze of one of the other cloaks who'd been a part of the raid this morning, and both men suppressed a snicker.
You want the truth? Truth is, I'm the same as any of you.
He ran his armored fingers through his dark hair, dropping his voice by half.
My father was a cobbler, and his father before him. But Cirrus, his eyes flicked toward heaven, Cirrus had other plans. I took a chance, risked my own neck, and the governor rewarded me for it.
He saw nods through the crowd. Everyone knew the story of the peasant hero who'd foiled the plot to assassinate the gov.
He gave me a broom cupboard in the keep.
Nott had to bite his lip to keep from laughing outright. He hadn't seen the lordling's palatial quarters in the keep for himself, but he knew that they sat directly over the falls, and that he had a retinue of servants to cater to his every whim.
And I told myself then I wouldn't waste my chance to do good with what I'd been given, to honor God and Governor with every breath in my body.
He nodded to one of the house guards, who lurched forward, hefting in both hands a wooden lockbox that Nodding hadn't noticed until now. White Rose flipped the clasp and opened it.
You think I care about the gold?
He upended the box, and hundreds of crowns spilled onto the lawn. The keepers braced themselves against the press of the crowd, straining to get closer to the king's ransom White Rose had just dumped on the grass.
None of it means anything, he said. The only thing you take with you in the end is your honor. And what you leave behind are the stories men tell about you. But him, he leveled a finger at the sword in the ground, he's a pit fighter. He spat the phrase like a curse. More money than kings. Fame, women. He has his little empire. And what's he done with it?
His breath caught. Nott had to admire his performance, even if most of it was a crock of shit.
Does he remember? White Rose said. Does he remember nailing heels onto boots by candlelight until the small hours because Da couldn't stop his hands from shaking? Does he remember the lean years when my family had to boil shoe leather until it was soft enough to eat?
Not notice several women in the crowd drying their eyes with their kerchiefs. He reached for his belt. Not thought he meant to draw his sword, but he withdrew a sheaf of papers that had been rolled into a tight bundle and thrust through his belt behind his scabbard. He unrolled the letters, smoothed them on his chest, and brandished them above his head.
Or is he too busy trying to tear down the house that God built, spreading lies about me? That's what these are.
He flung them up in the air, and for half an instant he disappeared in a cloud of falling white.
Damnable, slanderous lies, down to the last,
White Rose spat.
He knows it. That's why he's afraid to show his face.
Nodding's gaze trailed across the crowd, his hobnail boots digging into grass to keep from sliding as he and the other keepers strained to hold them back. His stomach clenched. He glimpsed a familiar face bobbing between the onlookers, not 10 steps from where Nott stood.
The boy. The boy from the rooftop.
His face was battered and puffy, and he had his hood drawn, but Nott recognized him instantly. The smirking little face was branded on Nodding's mind, had been ever since he slipped through his fingers by disappearing like magic over the brink. The lieutenant had been irate after Nott made his report. Lady What's-It, the cliffside crone whose emerald pendant the boy had pinched, was out for blood, and after the search party he'd led down to the Hinter to sift through the boy's viscera had turned up nothing, not even a blood splat. Nott was certain he'd be sacked. For over a moon, he wished he had been. Instead, the lieutenant had put him to task shoveling shit out of the cells by the bucketful. It was wretched work. Some of the cells hadn't been mucked out in a 7-year. Every day, he considered deserting. He might have done it, too, if he had any prospects beyond the edge, and if the consequence for desertion wasn't death.
Instead, he'd kept his head down and done his work, his detail a whetstone on which to sharpen to a razor's edge his hatred for the lieutenant, the boy, and every bleeding nutter who smeared his own filth on the walls of his cell. "What the hell are you doing?" the keeper on his left hissed, not blinked. He'd broken ranks and taken two steps into the crowd toward the boy. His comrades scrambled to hold back the bodies trying to surge through the gap. "Where are you, Reaper?" roared White Rose, one foot planted on the mound of gold. "Face me!" To the crowd, he added, "He wants to hide behind his letters. He's terrified to face someone he can't pay to lose." Nott glanced back at the boy. The thief hadn't noticed him yet. He looked sickened by White Rose's speech. Nott reached for the irons on his belt.
"Hold the line,"
he told the cloak on his left out of the corner of his mouth, pressing into the throng.
"It'll be only a minute."
"You want blood?" The crowd cheered. "I'll give you blood," the lordling promised. "Before God and men, the Reaper will stand trial for the lies he's told. We'll see what sort of man he is." Nott didn't see what he did next. He only had eyes for the boy. But based on how the other Greycloaks told him about it later, as Nott closed the gap between him and the boy, now five steps, now three, the nobleman bent down and scooped up a double fistful of crowns. "As for the rest of you," Nott's shadow loomed large over the boy. He looked up, and his battered face went pale. Nodding lunged for him with the irons. At that moment, White Rose flung a fistful of crowns high into the air above the crowd. He spun on his heel and did the same on the other side, then flung one more handful to each side. Immediately, the crowd was in a frenzy on both sides. The boy slipped Nodding's lunge with the irons, and before the keeper could get a second chance, he was buffeted back as every peasant in the crowd scrambled to get their hands on a gold piece. They swarmed the line of keepers and surged for the half-spent pile of crowns in the middle of the clearing, biting and kicking and clawing each other back. White Rose didn't linger after his largesse. He looked grimly satisfied as his house guards formed a tight perimeter and marched him toward the double doors, not hesitating to kick out of the way anyone who didn't clear the path. One of the soldiers plucked the hand and a halfer out of the ground on their way out, and before anyone noticed, they were gone. Nodding dug his boots into the grass to keep from losing his feet. It was moments like these where men got trampled to death. The other Greycloaks were fighting to restore order. They'd unslung their batons and set about cracking the heads of anyone within reach. He looked back at the boy. He was long gone. Bitter disappointment reared up in Nodding's breast, and he stood there like a stone in the river as the crowd rushed past, staring at the empty place where the boy had been. They splashed vinegar in his face, and Hatham woke up spluttering. It burned his eyes, and in the little cuts their armored fists had left on his cheeks and brow. Tears ran down his cheeks as his eyes tried to rinse out the caustic liquid. He was on his knees and naked. He'd still been half-conscious when they carried him to the upper floor of the garrison, and they'd chained his arms to each wall, wrenching them wide until he thought his shoulders would separate. His leg irons had been unlocked while they looped them through a ring bolted into the ground, and Hatham had used the momentary lapse to sink his foot into the armored groin of the nearest Greycloak. They beat him again for that. He'd still been awake when they blacked out the barred window with an old bedsheet. Once they snapped closed the iron doorplate, the only light that came through was the meager sliver that crept under the door. He'd clung to that horizontal thread of torchlight by the tips of his fingers for as long as he could before the darkness took him. He heard voices. His eyes were still stinging from the vinegar when his vision cleared enough for him to make out the bleary shape standing in the doorway.
"Hatham."
The voice was like steel on a whetstone. It made goose flesh course down the brawler's outstretched arms.
"That's your name, is it, Hatham?"
He articulated each syllable slowly, as if savoring the taste.
"You murdered my apprentice.
The brawler's jaw tightened as he recognized the voice. The torturer's breath was hot and sour on his face, and the hairs on Hatham's neck prickled as the man's gaze raked him up and down.
I hear you've come back from beyond the doors of death.
Long Knives crooned as he clucked over his patient. His probing fingers pinched and prodded the brawler's chest and arms. He found one of his cracked ribs, and Hatham gasped, his vision flickering black.
What's it like?
He tried to speak, but all he managed was a guttural lowing sound, like a dying ox.
You don't remember?
He sounded disappointed.
Let's find out together, shall we?
He saw a flash of steel in the torturer's hand.
Pay close attention. I want to hear every detail.
He carved a thin stripe of fire along the brawler's side, following the line of his ribs. The chains rattled as Hatham snarled and tried to flinch away from him. Long Knives was smiling.
Let's begin.
Wow, that does it on Act 2. This story continues to be an absolute beast to record and edit and upload and everything. So from the bottom of my heart, it really does mean the world to be able to share this with all of you, whether you've been following it from the very beginning or if you've just been catching it in the last few weeks. Just as a reminder, after this episode, I will be taking a break of just a few weeks in order to catch up on work for this project and some other stuff I've got in the tank. If you're enjoying this story, you can help to send it further by leaving a like or a comment on the video, dropping a 5-star review wherever you catch your podcasts, or just texting it to a friend. All right, when you guys catch me in July, we will be in the home stretch, Act 3, ready to finish this thing out strong. And keep an eye out because I'm going to be dropping a couple more short recap videos in the next couple of weeks just to give us a picture of the whole story so far. All right, that is enough out of me, and I will catch you guys very soon. I'll see you in July.